getting some places.
Okay.
They look reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
The simulator is a little bit slow, but it's not as slow as your guys.
Okay.
Even printing your line is fine.
Okay.
Well, the other thing is that the system I'm using now is really minimal. It's very small. It's just a shell, which is the image that PTL team has as a test, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have any service or anything at all. So it just, I know that it's more or less working because it just generates traces when I do something, like LS. So it starts generating traces and stuff.
Mm.
I'm guessing that the code that is running while the system is idle is in the cache. So I don't get traces while, I don't do anything weird.
Mm. Okay.
So for now, I run for a few seconds and I got 20,000 accesses. Okay. So for now, I am just able to get the address, the memory address, but I still don't know how to get if it's a read or a write,
mm-hmm.
and the timestamp,
mm-hmm.
which I think is also important. And I know that the timestamp, I just need to check a little bit more, but I know that the timestamp, they keep a simulated timestamp counter, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly the number I need. And with respect to the read and store, with that I'm a little bit lost. I don't know exactly where I can find that information.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems promising, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm hoping that it's just a question of time until we get
there. Yeah, me too. I think this is the one, so I hope you can get traces from that. And the thing is that, the other thing is I also boot Gen 2 system with PTL SIM, which means that we can have a real system, not only the...
Oh, that's,
the PTL SIM dummy image.
With network and everything?
I haven't been able to set up the network, but I think it's more a problem of them rather than PTL SIM.
Okay.
Because I was trying to set up.
Because you need to probably install things like, you can install via CD or I don't know if CD simulator exists, but.
Install what?
For instance, you might have to install BLTK and Apache and things like that, right?
Yeah, but that's. Apache is fine, but BLTK is a little bit harder because for BLTK you need a NIC system.
Okay.
So probably
so this Gen 2 that you're booting is not without X.
Without X. And but my concern is that if you have an X system, probably it becomes too slow. Right?
So with QMU, did you have X in there or no?
We have X in there.
But
the problem is that it slowed down a lot.
Mm.
And that's that's only the console. I didn't try the
But if we have simulated time, mm-hmm. and if the experiment is not too long, for instance with BLTK, then it might still be okay having a slowdown.
Right. In any case, I think BLTK took a lot of time. So that's another problem. And the other concern I have is that I remember that it's somewhat hard to set up. I remember changing some code of BLTK or something that I probably didn't save.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so maybe
for the developer. I prefer to look for some other workload, actually, because I know that BLTK is a good tool, but it's also not up to date.
Mm-hmm.
It's not updated.
Maybe there is some other alternate tool to VLTK.
now
yeah.
available.
Yeah.
So has it been 2 years since we did that work?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so I guess we're still trying to get these traces and then get the motivation graphs, right?
Right.
So what do you suggest we should do? I mean, are there things that we can do in parallel, or you want to focus on getting this first?
Yeah, I think at this point, I have a lot of work in both projects.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, actually, I was checking my to-do yesterday, and it's a little bit crowded.
Mm-hmm.
So, for now, I would like just to focus on the
PTO
thing and have the traces.
I mean,
unless we drop something else, right? Okay.
If we cannot get the load and stores,
uh-huh.
I think we cannot do some of the graphs in the motivation.
Right, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, if we don't have the if we don't have the store and loads, then we only need. I mean, we can refer to this other paper that has some workload, right? Plus.
Which?
So
that the paper that we discussed at some point? Is
yeah, there was.
I don't know if they talk about reads and writes separately. I think they just talk about access.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They only talk about access.
Yeah.
Alone.
You know, I was just thinking that if we are not able to get load and store with PTL SIM, maybe we should still use QMO because we get that information from QMO.
We have the information from QMO.
And we have the address.
We have the address, but we don't have a timestamp.
We don't have timestamp, and we don't have.
And
we don't have
all access.
It's only data access.
It's only data accesses and it's before cache.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm getting all the accesses. But I was discussing with Ricardo, and we were discussing this way of getting memory traces, that is, make all the pages read only and get the second page full. And we realize that it's not possible because in that case we will be getting traces before cache, right? Because each time you try to, so that's not exactly what we want.
Yeah, so we'll get all memory accesses in
mm-hmm.
any case,
including the ones that go to cache.
That's true, but I mean, even if you do that, still, it seems like that technique would incur substantial overhead. And the overhead itself will be huge in collecting any trace.
Yeah.
What I was referring to is the Ricardo's...
I know, the new...
The new hardware.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with that, can we get traces? I mean, can we get load versus store? And
yes. I don't know about load versus store, but the thing is that, okay, so it's a little bit tricky. I now understand better what's going on. So there is this, those are called performance management registers or something like that. Counters,
mm-hmm.
performance management counters, and the thing is that you can set some counters so that after each overflows with some number you give, let's say after I have 1,000 of these events, you send a fault, okay, saying that this number of events were complete.
But I could also do every event.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So what he did was to set that overflow to be one,
mm-hmm.
so that each access after L2 cache is generates a fault.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, and that's why he can do that, is that he, that fault comes with the addresses, the address that caused that fault to happen.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and he says that there is very little overhead for running this thing?
He said that it's, yeah, little overhead.
So but that's an alternate, right? I mean, to the simulation, this is an alternate technique.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I was also thinking that are the instruction fetches operate differently that than data fetches? That do you I mean, do these performance counters also
include the fetch?
Yeah, fetch instruction.
I think so. Yeah, but they operate differently. I mean, one is done implicitly by the CPU, and the other one is done by the code, right?
Right.
Because of the code.
Correct.
So, but I'm guessing.
And both of them use cache, I'm assuming. In both instruction and data.
Yes.
Use cache.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. Because you could have locality both, right? So you probably, it's a good idea to use cache for both.
So the processor will automatically load instructions from the cache if it exists, or otherwise it will fault. Otherwise it will be a cache miss.
Uh-huh.
I just don't know enough about architecture to understand what might happen in detail.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so maybe it's easier than I'm thinking it is.
It's usually harder than one thinks.
Yeah. I mean, what I mean is that it's for what we are looking for, maybe it's straightforward.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we don't need to go into all that detail.
Yeah.
Okay, so. So yeah, I guess at this point you're still trying to figure out how to get the load and store information, but you're getting some memory traces with time and address.
I don't have the time yet, but
okay.
I know the variable somewhere, so I just need to find it and print it.
Okay, that's good.
And the load store is the one that I'm a little bit lost, but I'm sure you can find it.
Yeah, and the other thing is that it might be a good idea for us to set up the server so we can play back the web server traces.
Play back?
Yeah, in the simulator, the PTLs, and to set up the Apache and web server. I mean, before you do that, I guess you have to set up networking. Right?
Yeah.
So we can get some real traces.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can start off with something simpler like postmark. You just need file system workload. I think postmark is a reasonable benchmark to start with.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's sufficient to just do some of these benchmarks rather than to have like a full real system to collect these traces.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm assuming that setting up postmark is would be much easier than setting up an Apache web server and replaying the traces. Right. With postmark, I guess you need network to download the postmark benchmark itself. But
well, I have to set up network at some point. So.
Yeah. Okay. So there are some next steps that you can work on.
Yeah. Actually, I don't think I need to. I just need to mount the root as a loop back and probably depends on it.
Oh, I see, okay.
But I prefer to set up the network.
Okay.
So I read the version, the last version that you did. Fine.
I extended the discussion that we had the other day.
Yeah, exactly.
Trying to tie on the loose end.
One thing I didn't understand was the D in the cost of. I think you didn't explain that in the text.
This one?
In the cost of.
DI?
DI.
Oh yeah, I forgot that. That's true. That's just whether the page is dirty or not. It's a binary.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I forgot what was that for. Yeah, exactly. So it's dirty. That makes sense. So I was a little bit confused with this.
Mm-hmm.
This, of course. So this would be the cost of writing. So you're talking about here some cleaning, but I didn't understand exactly what cleaning you were talking about. You were talking about the
garbage collection.
The garbage collection of the SSD or the garbage collection of our swap allocation?
The garbage collection of the SSD.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see.
Well, because in static mapping, we don't do any garbage collection. In case of the logging with cleaning, we do garbage collection.
Mm-hmm.
In case of the padding,
we
don't do garbage. It's sort of implicit.
Right.
And that takes in that overhead is captured in the I/O resolution. Now, in case of the logging with cleaning, that's the part that I guess I have not addressed here.
Mm-hmm.
That is the garbage collection of our system, not the SSD.
Yeah, you talk here that this I/O
IO resolution,
in case of a static mapping. I didn't understand this very well. So.
Yeah. Not in case of static mapping. In case of static mapping, the I/O resolution is 100%. So it will be 1.
Mm-hmm.
So that this term goes away.
Okay.
But in case of padding. Let's take the example of padding, right? The I/O resolution is the amount of data that you really want to write divided by the total amount of data that you write, including the padding information.
Okay.
So let's say you have to write twice as much data, the I/O resolution would be 50%.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's 50%, you pay a cost of twice the latency.
Mm-hmm.
For each page write. You have to do one page write.
I see.
So that's the idea. And then the G here is the garbage collection overhead.
So in some sense, this address also the problem of selecting the segment that we're writing to. Is that right?
What, the I/O resolution?
Mm-hmm. Because
the easiest way to understand I/O resolution would be with the static and padding mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
The static, the I/O resolution is 1.
Mm-hmm.
And so you incur the latency of only one page write.
Mm-hmm.
Plus the induced internal garbage collection overhead.
Okay. Which
I think this has to be clear.
Yeah. Which in the case of the static, it should be higher than the case of.
That is what we expect because there is a random write
mm-hmm.
workload.
Right.
And that's what I'm talking about here. So so there is one garbage collection overhead for random and one garbage collection for sequential.
Mm-hmm.
If you're writing randomly, you have to, if it's completely random that you're hitting one page per block,
mm-hmm.
then you have to do one block merge per write
mm-hmm.
and one block erase per write.
Okay.
In the best case scenario, but in the worst case, we know that there can be cascading
mm-hmm.
block merges, right, and erase.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the sort of the best case overhead for completely random. In case of sequential, you do only one page erase per page write.
because so it's amortized. So since you're writing sequentially, mm-hmm. you write an entire segment, you erase an entire segment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the garbage collection overhead for a single write operation is the block erase time divided by the block size.
Okay.
In pages.
Okay.
So that's the basic idea. What I don't address here yet is the garbage collection for the external garbage collection
mm-hmm.
for the logging with cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay, so let's do it. I will read this more carefully then and let's see, because I don't have any comments by now. So in some sense I was thinking again that it's somewhat incomplete, right? And I was trying to do like a real, trying to think in a real implementation so that
mm-hmm.
really we have better insights in the design.
That's right? Good.
So, well, first, these to do, I was checking the allocation of OpenSolaris and FreeBSD, and it turns out that the best allocation policy is in Linux. I mean, it's a fancier. The other guys just do, in the case of OpenSolaris, they have a bitmap of the swap and just find the first bit or the first spot free and right there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's no allocation or anything. And in the case of the FreeBSD, it's a little bit more complicated, but it's just a matter of data structures. They use some Radix tree or, well, anyway. The thing is that they try to do allocation by big chunks. So it's somewhat similar to what we are trying to do. So they say, okay, I am in a memory pressure.
Mm.
I need to
write out mm.
plenty of pages,
mm.
right, to make room. And the idea is that they send swap several pages at the same time. So what the swap allocation is trying to do is to find a contiguous space in the swap for all those pages.
But
right?
If it doesn't exist, which would
if
be
it
the
doesn't
case?
Exist, it start decreasing the size of the contiguous till you find a spot, which in the worst case will be one, or even the worst case there is no space left.
Mm.
Right. So
I think what we need is a description of that. I mean, you can be as elaborate as you want
mm-hmm.
in these and the corresponding references.
Okay,
and
yeah.
I can do another pass to
okay.
define it.
Okay, that's the other thing, that is not in the books, that's in the code. So I don't know how to reference the code.
Mm.
Because in the OpenSolaris internals, it's not there. And the FreeBSD, I don't know if you received the
email. I saw the email, yeah. I was looking at the website to find the instructor copy, but
right.
it's not been successful so far.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know if, I know that George has a book, but because George is not here, I don't know where to find books.
Mm.
And it's not in the library either. So.
So he has the FreeBSD implementation book?
He has a book. But I don't know where is the book, or I can ask him actually.
Yeah.
I didn't realize I can ask him. Yeah, I will send an email today to him. So
yeah,
I don't know.
If you're not able to find it, let me know so I can search some more.
Okay. And I don't know if that appears in that book.
Okay.
So, yeah, but in any case, at least in the OpenSolaris case, I need to reference it on the code. So, yeah. Okay.
So in the OpenSolaris book, they don't talk about this. I would expect that they would talk about this.
They talk about more, you know, high-level stuff. Although the book is really big, but I guess there's too much to talk that this is really, you know, detailed. Right?
Uh-huh.
So,
mm.
yeah.
Interesting. So this is not even...
yeah. No, they talk about, you know, the memory manager and... data structures are key. And that's the other thing I want to talk about. I know that there was some concern, Akshat has some concern with the overhead.
Yeah.
So it turns out, I was checking the how or the data structures to keep the memory manager or the virtual memory manager working on previously, right? Just previously, and I think Open Solaris is similar, very similar. So the idea, and Linux somewhat similar. So the idea is that I think the biggest the structure that has most of the overhead is one called something like page, VM page or the page structure, which they allocate one per physical RAM.
Per physical RAM or physical frame?
Frame,
okay.
Physical frame.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually 1% of the memory, which, you know, if it's 128 megabytes, then it's 1 megabyte of the data structure. So the good thing for us is that it's for physical RAM, right? So it's not for swap or for a variable memory, virtual memory. It's just for RAM.
Well, I see what you mean, yeah.
So when we pull out the 6 gigabytes from the 8 gigabyte system, then we also reduce that data structure proportionally.
Mm.
So we're fine in that respect, I think.
I see.
So.
No, but how is it? How is that possible? Because you would need one mapping per virtual page, also.
Yeah, exactly. So the idea is that you have the outer space of the processes, right? So can I?
Yeah, go ahead and edit whatever you need to.
Just to make a picture of it, of how the structures relate to each other. So the idea is that they have the outer space, let's say, right? So the outer space, they have something called, something called VMAP, which is basically a pointer to hardware-related memory management, and they have something called VMAP,
mm-hmm.
Right? So this structure is only one per process, so I don't think that's one problem.
Because both are one per process?
Yes, one per process. But the thing is that I think now our pressure would be that we are allowing more processes, right, per RAM than before,
mm-hmm.
And that's where the overhead comes.
Okay.
So
what are the VMAP and VMMAP?
Yeah. So this VMMAP has some a list or an array. I don't remember. The point is that they have some map entries, VMMAP entries. Right, and probably a list of map entries.
Okay,
so there is one map entry per. I see it as segment per segment of the process.
Okay.
So you have one map entry for the text,
mm-hmm.
map entry for the stack, map entry for the feed, and so on. And the idea is that they have different, for instance, permissions. Okay, so you don't have to write in the text and so on. And these point to some objects, they call objects,
mm-hmm.
which is some kind of abstract class, let's mm-hmm. say. And this could be, they have several options, but it's basically anonymous,
mm-hmm.
or it could be a file. So depending on these two, these point to a VNode or something else. Right. So the point is that I think this is usually small. There are not many map entries because the process doesn't have any much segments anyway. And
Where is the page level mapping information stored? In which structure?
Page level mapping.
Yeah, so for instance, if there is a page fault, then which structure is consulted to retrieve it from
source? It will be map entry. This map entry has some something like the base and offset of that fragment. So it's saying.
So that's the base and offset in the virtual address space.
The virtual address space.
Correct.
Right.
But that segment is broken up further into pages.
Yes.
Each segment. And when there is a page fault, you need to look at the specific page that calls the page fault
and
find out where it is.
Yeah, I think this points to several of these.
Okay.
That points again to a B node or whatever. Right? Which, assuming that this is a text,
okay,
will point to a B node, which is executable.
Okay.
Right? So.
No, so. I don't know if you already answered my question, but my question is that, so let's say you have page fault, right?
Right.
And then you have a memory address in the virtual address space, which caused the page fault.
Okay.
And there are some pages of the segment that might be resident in physical memory, other pages might be resident in swap. So you need to identify for each page where it is on swap.
Right.
So where is that structure
maintained?
That's what the page fault handler needs.
Right. So I think the page fault handler is something like, you have the page fault, you have the virtual memory address, and you start looking in these VM map entries. So you find with this,
which segment it is.
And exactly. So this would be, I'm guessing this would be an array of these structures, of these objects, right?
Okay. One per page.
Would be sequential. Yeah, one per page.
Oh, one per page. That's the part I was missing.
Actually, I don't know if it's one per page, because probably they have some optimizations where they also give some base and offset here. That's also possible, right?
That is possible, yeah.
That is possible. But let's say that it's one per page. And after you have one per page, based on the object, you know where is that backed up in, you know, in back end.
See, now we get to a point where there is a memory requirement per page of the virtual address space, which is independent of the size of the physical.
Right,
memory.
Right. That's true. But the thing is that
could be the bulk of the.
Yeah, but it's not always there, and it's also depending on how many processes you have. The thing is that if you have one process that has a huge address space, well, if it's one per page, it will be the same. But if they have some optimization, then these data structures won't be that big.
Usually the case is that with virtual memory systems, you either have the forward map or the reverse map.
Right. And I think that depends on the amount of memory you have.
So, amount of virtual memory you're using. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think, I read somewhere that, for instance, Linux has both. But Linux uses one or either one or the other depending on the amount of memory you have, physical memory. Right. So if you have more than 4 gigs, then you use the reverse mapping.
That's odd, because the reason to use the reverse mapping would be to control the size of the table. So the smaller the physical memory, the more motivation to you for you to have the reverse mapping.
Then it's probably when you're using 64 bits. Because in 64 bits you have a huge page table.
That's true. Yeah, if you're using 64 bits, that means you have exactly. Your virtual address space can be really huge, and you want to use the reverse mapping
at
that point. Yeah. But I guess in either case, I don't think we can escape from this requirement that for each page of information, you need to have a mapping on the swap or on file.
Right.
and the sum of all that information, and how much is it in terms of percentage of the physical memory is what we are interested in.
Mm-hmm.
So where did you find this information about 1% of?
That is in the Robert Love book, in the something like Linux kernel development.
We certainly need to refer to that book and put a statement in there.
Yeah, but
and
the thing is that book is only, when I'm saying 1%, it's only talking about the per frame structure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, this also math. No, actually, this is it's not like this. This is a video.
Okay.
And these points are page.
Point to page struct.
So page struct.
Which is one per physical frame?
One per physical frame.
But you can have multiple of these objects pointing to the same page because they
yes,
are.
That's true. Because, for instance, if you have.
Or they could be null, actually. I mean, they cannot point to the same physical page because then there would be a conflict. Maybe some of those are null. And when they are null, they need to point to a swap location instead.
Exactly. So, yeah. So, but for instance, if you open, let's say when you open several batch, I'm guessing all those batch processes are pointing to the same executable, which is one single B node for the whole system.
That's true.
So the page would be the same. Right?
That is only with shared pages. That is only with shared pages. But
yeah.
In the case of non-shared pages, you can either point to a unique page frame or no frame at all, which means that
yeah,
it will be a page swap.
Yeah, and that only happens with anonymous pages.
Right.
Backward or.
So you said that there is a pointer to a page. Do you see somewhere where the pointer to a page is replaced by something else, or is there something else other than a pointer to a page, like a swap entry?
Yeah. So. In this anonymous case, they have something called, because you have for each of these cases, you have something called a pager,
mm-hmm.
which is the one that takes care of
loading
page in or page out.
So pager should have the mapping information to swap.
Exactly. So
for each.
Yeah, actually, I think this structure points to the pager, and is this structure the one that has the information of where it's located in swap, as in the case of the vNode.
Mm-hmm. In the case of vNode, I guess you want to have somehow information about the file itself.
Exactly, and the object
of
that
yeah.
page in the file.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I guess what the Robert Love book might mean is that
I think
that
what
information
is that these pages, all these pages that you have, is 1% of memory.
But these pages are.
But it's not account for all these stuff.
And if you can make a case that the pages are the majority of the storage.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's the information that you can help bring into the paper. If you can find out more, I think this is a good discussion we had, but we don't understand it completely.
Yeah,
you can do one more reading of whatever you were reading. You understand what it is, the cost that we are trying to address,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, so I guess the cost is what happened. The worst case is that if you're using the whole virtual memory you have, including the swap and the physical RAM, how much of this data structure is using the RAM
right.
itself.
And the swap is, the size of the swap is the original memory size, not the size
yeah.
of the SSD.
Yeah,
we discussed
absolutely.
That already.
Yeah. So, yeah, so if it's 16 gigabytes SSD, it's only 6
gigabytes of BSP export per socket.
Right.
Well, you know, assuming this system of 8 gigabytes, original 8 gigabytes, and then 2 gigabytes plus SSD.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so I will read more about this because at the moment I have more clear, but to check again the structures and so on.
Okay, so do you have any comments about others? There were comments that you had was, okay, explain this.
Yeah, I also have and some more comments, but I forgot the paper.
About external GC overhead with logging plus team. So that's one. Back to sort of maybe the sleep pages per block would be a better block size. Okay, so did you have any comments about the flushing discussion?
No, I think I didn't read that in detail, only the allocation.
Okay, so but maybe you can read it and...
Yeah, but I think we can also, probably, I will also, we can find more comments and improvements. If we discuss this, which is a partial design that I did of the system, at least for the allocation part, I also start... I think after this, the replacement algorithm, which also needs design, and I think somewhat explained here.
Well, our goal is to make your implementation consistent with the design. So if we
right.
want to change the design based on
ideas, or we can also change
that.
The implementation based on the design, right?
Yeah, but in the end, they have to be consistent.
yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I have this idea of, let me
just make a picture.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I have the memory, right? And the memory has multiple pages. So the idea is that the swap is divided into segments, and
yes.
I'm saying that these segments should be ideally the size of the logical block.
Or multiple
or multiple of the logical block size.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that we maintain some kind of buffer in memory, which is actually no buffer as we discussed, but it's more hybrid memory buffer structure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which only keeps track of these pages that we are going to flush. And then we have the swap, which with these segments, and we flush all this sequentially to the segments.
Yeah.
Right. So there are...
Now that flushing would depend on which approach we are using.
Okay.
For instance, we use static mapping, then there is no concept of a segment. We just write it to the original location.
Right.
If it is logging with cleaning, then you do exactly what you're suggesting now.
Right.
If logging with padding, then we need to pad.
Yeah, that's another thing. You know, I was thinking that then we need to somehow, because I think I remember that I read that the swap system is triggered when you have some. Or you run, you have less memory than some threshold.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Say, I think in the case of an NTSC was something like, if you have less than 2 megabytes, you go ahead and start paging. So the thing is that in the case of padding, we need extra memory, right? Because we need to now read.
Mm-hmm.
Some things from here to RAM.
Possibly, if they are not memory resident already.
Yeah, but the other thing is that if the
it's unlikely that they are memory resident.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, because if their memory is resident, then the slot becomes invalid.
Exactly.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So which means I need to change the discussion that I have here.
Exactly.
So I completely forgot we had the discussion the other day.
Yeah.
So if it is memory resident, then
if it's memory, the thing is that what is in the. I mean, we can do it either way. I think even the discussion that we have is fine, because we can somehow reuse the data in the.
There is no point of, because that's just
there is no point
extra
of reusing,
overhead.
Yeah.
There's just extra overhead.
There's
you
no
can eliminate the overhead then.
So, do we have any advantage in keeping that in the SSD? Because otherwise, then we don't need.
Well, the only reason for padding from memory would be to clean them. Okay, to
mm-hmm.
clean those pages.
Mm-hmm.
So if you write them out, if they're dirty, then you can
yeah.
clean them out.
Right.
That is the only advantage to do it. But there is really otherwise no reason. Our goal anyway with the write buffer is only cleaning, right? Even the lowest or the low cost page replacements, even that we are doing only cleaning when we are flushing them out.
Yeah, but then there is another problem. If we are assuming that what is in memory is not in swap and the other way around, then that means that all pages in memory are dirty, right?
A good point, yeah. That's
because there's no backstop for them.
That is exactly right. So, yeah, I guess there is a reason to retain those pages.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly right. And, there is a reason for retaining pages which are clean in memory.
Okay.
Not pages which are dirty.
Exactly.
Because pages that are dirty.
Yeah, I think that the policy should be something like, if you are in the SSD and if that page is in the SSD and it's in memory, but it's in memory clean,
yeah.
then
you pad.
Then you pad.
Yeah.
And that is valid in the SSD. But in the moment that page becomes dirty,
mm-hmm.
then it's invalidated from
the SSD.
Correct.
That's a very good point. Yeah. Let me make a note of that, because that discussion has to go in somewhere.
Yeah, so at some point I have to change this as well, then.
So yeah, this is a good observation. So
Okay, so that helps clarify some more things.
Mm-hmm.
Now what that means is that there are a larger number of, potentially larger number of pages that become free in the swap, especially the pages that are dirty.
Mm-hmm.
So the efficiency padding of logging improves because you get more free slots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you also get more data to write to the FMP.
And
which is good. I mean, you have more DT data to do padding from memory when you have to write to the FMP.
So padding also needs to be, you have more data from memory to pad?
Yeah, because now you have more dirty pages, right? I mean, in the case where you have all clean, then, well, in that case, you should not have any problem in the memory pressure. I mean, when you have memory pressure, it's because you have enough dirty pages to write to it. Right. Because otherwise you don't have memory pressure.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, not necessarily. You can still have memory pressure when everything is clean.
Yeah, but you can clean
the replacement
by just
cost is
really
long.
Exactly.
As the most efficient cleaning if you have all clean pages. Most efficient replacement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so I guess if a page is clean, then it can be immediately discarded because the SSD location is valid, and that's why it would not be lost.
Right.
On the other hand, if a page becomes dirty, the SSD location becomes invalid.
Right.
So when that page needs to be replaced, it must be written out.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's being written out, if you're doing padding, then and if there are intervening valid pages that are not in memory, then you need to read from SSD and write it back.
That's right.
So anything that's not in memory must be read from SSD,
right,
and written back.
Exactly.
If it's valid.
If it's valid, exactly.
Actually, now here's the other thing. So that situation doesn't arise. The need to rewrite a pad with a dirty page. You don't need to do that because the slot will be invalid. There is no reason
exactly to
overwrite.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's go through the what else.
Yeah. So I think I first start discussing. I just focus on padding for now. So I was discussing here is okay. Let's say that you have your buffer full of data, and you need to write flash, right? So the first question is, what segment you select from all the segments in the SSD available, and I had two policies, right? So the first policy was greedy, which is select the segment that has less pages, like
less valid pages,
which means that you reduce the cost of padding because you don't have to read from flash. And the other policy is perfect square leveling, which is, I was thinking of this, some kind of when you have the SSD like a clock, from the cloud. Replacement, so you select, you have here and you start selecting segments
sequentially.
So you say, okay, now replace this and this and so on. So you have a perfect level, core leveling. Okay, so I said that the first one is good because it's good for performance. It's probably, in terms of page padding, the best for performance. But it has a problem in the word leveling. Well, the second one is very good for word leveling, but it has a problem with the performance because probably you are reading a lot of or doing a lot of extra work. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking that you have basically three options. So the first one is three options to solve these two problems, right? So the first option was that we do the clock, but we skip segments that have some which utilization is higher than some threshold we give.
Mm-hmm.
Say if it's 50% or more use, then we skip that to the next segment, and so on. But then you know, also could have the same problem as of word leveling,
mm-hmm.
right? So the other option I was thinking is that we could probably have the same threshold, but now we have for each one a counter
mm-hmm.
of how many times have you skipped that
mm-hmm.
That segment, and if that counter is reach some even number, then you go ahead and clean.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that was the two options with the first, you know, the perfect word leveling,
mm-hmm.
and the other option is a modification of greedy, right? So now you can give some score, and this is similar to the cleaning mechanism of LFS, of the original paper. So you give some score to each segment, and based on the age and utilization, and you clean the segment with the highest score, right? Not clean, but you choose the segment with the highest score. So the advantage of the modified clock option is that the data structure and bookkeeping is straightforward, right? In the clock case, you only need an array with the number of times some segments have been skipped, and you need one integer pointing to the next segment to choose. So, while in the case of the score and the greedy case with scores for segments is more complicated because now you need to have some kind of priority queue, which you need to update. I don't know exactly how it works, but you need to update the segment data structure because you need to update the scores at some point. And when you need to choose one segment, you need to have one data structure that gives you that segment very quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to go through the whole array.
So one thing about that I had in mind about the clock thing is that
mm-hmm.
so let's say you have you skip a certain segment which is large number of valid pages, certain number of times, you reach
right.
the threshold, you clean it.
Right.
After cleaning, that same segment will end up with even more valid pages than before.
Right.
So which means that it's going to go through thresholds
again. Right.
So
yeah,
over time, does it mean that the segment will be clean?
You won't keep the word leveling.
Yeah.
That's true.
Is there a
Well,
is there a way to sort of move the segment to
exactly.
another segment?
We can do some kind of migration. Absolutely, you can do that, right? Just to avoid that cases with your terminal.
And is that what the hot called segment approach is in original law structure?
In the law structure file system, what they do is to keep the hot call segment is about to have this primordial mode where you have most of the segments or either with almost no data or with almost full data.
That's the goal that they're going after.
Yes.
Mm.
Because the thing is that if you have plenty of segments with that are in on use, then the cleaning is more effective.
Right? Yes.
More efficient.
Now, what is the reason for using age there in the log structured file system? Because there is no bare leveling requirement in log
right.
structured file system. So
the thing is that they say that when the segment, the statement is something like space, free space in call segments is more valuable than free space in hot segments.
Is more valuable?
Valuable. And why is that? Because you know that in hot segments, that hot segment will be almost empty anyway at some point
mm-hmm.
because the data is hot and will be rewritten,
mm-hmm.
right? In the case of the cold data, it's not true because the cold data and that data won't be rewritten in the future.
So there is a motivation to clean the cold segment?
Yes, at some point. I mean, when it's too old and it has low utilization, then it's better to clean that one, right? Instead of a hot with a high utilization.
Mm.
See? Because the hot will be already anyway.
Yeah.
So you probably,
And there is sort of, I mean, the motivation is different. It's not wear leveling, but it requires the same mechanism.
Probably requires the same mechanism.
Because as the segment becomes older, that means it has not been overwritten,
mm-hmm.
it becomes more and more favorable candidate for cleaning.
Exactly.
So in some sense, it's the same goal or same mechanism that you need for wear leveling. As a segment is not overwritten for a period of time, you should clean it because otherwise other segments get overwritten more number of times.
Yeah, but there is a catch, right? The thing is that if your call segment is full utilized
mm-hmm.
and called, then you don't touch that segment at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't have to. Right?
Yeah.
So the question is, could that happen in this case? Because in that case, you would have exactly the same word leveling problem.
Mm. In this case, you might end up with the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
And what will happen is that it will reach counters multiple times. And then you choose to clean it, but then it will only be useful if you migrate it.
Right. Exactly.
You don't really get any space from a completely filled up cold segment. You had to migrate it so to at least get a benefit of wear level.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe what needs to be done is to design a policy which separates out wear leveling and migration. So what we are saying with
mm-hmm.
old segments that are completely utilized is that they are candidates for migration. Whereas
right.
old segments that are not completely utilized are candidates for cleaning
mm-hmm.
and possibly migration. Right? You may want to migrate it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this So I think I would certainly, this idea of clock, I think is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
But think about how you can integrate migration into it.
Right.
And what should be, you know, we know the source of migration possibly, but where should they be migrated? And can you use the clock information itself to choose the destination as well?
Yeah.
And
yeah, we're thinking
once you have source,
like,
and destination, then you need to next think about how to do the migration, because there is valid data in the destination also and valid data in the source. So how do you...
I was thinking something like some additional threat that do all this work, right, of word leveling of the swap.
And also flushing, right? I mean, the flushing also is done by a thread which keeps monitoring how much free space.
Yeah, yeah, which is a failure.
Yeah.
Right? But these two, I mean, the word leveling one will use the information of the clock to do its word leveling by migrating some probably segments to some other place. Underutilized. Yeah. Really
makes sense. Yeah, I certainly would recommend you to develop the clock idea more.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Whatever you're discussing right now is orthogonal to all the discussion we have in the paper so far.
Yes.
In the paper, we do not address the question of, well, how do I choose the next segment to clean or to pad or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that after that, we probably already discussed this. It's just, it's just the data structures that I need in the case of a clock, right? Which is sort of straightforward. Yeah, that's all. Which is, you know, it's a really straightforward data structure, which is the array and you point to the points to the next segment to choose. So I also had some thoughts, because I was thinking that, okay, there is a problem, right? There is an extra problem. In the case, I was thinking that, because I think this system will stress the memory pressure all the time, right? So that means that I'm gonna be, you know, doing a lot of page outs and selecting a lot of pages. So, so I was thinking, for instance, in the case of pages that are for code, text pages. So these text pages, they are usually clean, right? And that means that probably they will be, and I'm guessing we are doing some replacement algorithm that will select clean pages first, right? So that means that we will be
the replacement is based on this cost,
right?
And the cost favors clean pages,
right? But
if those pages are highly ranked,
yeah,
then we might clear dirty pages.
Exactly. Yeah. So then the problem should be solved. Because I was thinking that probably we will be, you know, evicting text pages all the time. But the bad thing about evicting these text pages is that we will be reading from disk, right?
Mm.
Which is a problem.
That's a very good point. That is a very good point, yeah.
So I was thinking that
maybe you could put it in swap, or
maybe we could put it in swap, or, but then we will have again, and I think we already had the discussion, but with the page cache,
mm-hmm.
right? So then you will have two pointers, now you will have actually one swap and one B node, so the synchronization would be
No, there is no real problem, actually. There is no real problem. Because the write requests to disk are independent of access memory. So when you access memory, you read from swap or write to swap. When you write to memory, you write to swap.
Yeah.
And when you read from memory, you read from swap. But when you write to disk, you write to disk.
Yeah, from but memory. That's true. But in the case of the text, like the code, it's just to execute, right? So, I mean, you need to read from disk anyway.
The first time you read from disk.
Right.
But then after it's populated, we can treat it as an anonymous page of the original VM design. But this is another thing, you can think of this as another level of
optimization. Okay. Yeah.
And we probably will have to do it because it might happen that some pages of code cannot fit in memory.
Yeah, but the good thing is that if they are highly ranked, then it won't be replaced.
Yeah. That's the idea with the cost structure.
Yeah, I think the replacement policy is an important thing here.
Yeah.
Very important thing here.
I agree.
Yeah, and the other thing is that now that I think about it, then there is a problem with the replacement that you're proposing here.
Mm-hmm.
And is that it only takes into account the cost for the SSD. But actually, we will be evicting pages that are also in disk, right?
No, these evictions are only to SSD, not to disk.
But
we're talking about a memory system, not a virtual memory system.
Okay.
Which is hybrid and uses virtual memory concepts.
Okay.
So swapping in the original system will still swap to disk.
Okay.
If the original system with 8 gigabytes of memory had swapping, then you swap to disk in this case also. But if the original system does not have any swapping, you swap to SSD potentially in this case.
I see. Yeah, I was thinking of this differently. I was thinking of replacing the swap with the SSD.
That is another view which might also be valuable, right? That we want to replace the original swap with a SSD-based swap, exclusively SSD-based swap, having no disk, nothing to do with disk at all. But that becomes a little bit more complex. It's probably more optimal, but it's more complex because then you have to address things like, okay, location on disk, location on SSD, and so on.
But I think it's more complex than the one that you're saying, right? And it's exactly that problem, right? You need to check where it's in.
So you always check the page struct.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, you'll have something similar to this,
mm-hmm.
right? But the code pages will be, instead of being files, they'll be anonymous.
So what you're saying is that all pages in the virtual memory will be backed by the SSD. Doesn't matter what.
Yeah.
So it will be the page cache and the text will be all backed by the SSD.
That is the goal, right? Because if you want to build a hybrid memory system, then you cannot bring the disk in.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to keep it simple, you can, of course, build a hybrid memory system with memory, SSD, and disk. But then we haven't discussed that direction yet.
Okay. I see.
All references to memory which were valid in the original system
mm-hmm.
would now be translated either to valid references or invalid references that are backed by an on SSD swap page.
I see. Okay, so I need to think about this differently.
Think about it in both ways, and then we can discuss, because I think that integrated view
maybe harder to describe and even to evaluate. Because now we can evaluate in a very simple way and say that we are looking at an original system with no swap.
Okay. And now with okay.
And now with a swap and. But I don't think the discussion is over, so I certainly would want you to think more about
it. Yeah, because I was thinking of a system without swap, and then a system with swap, which is an SSD, right? I mean, there is no disk involved at this point, or swap for disk involved.
Mm.
So, we were changing the VM, the virtual memory system, so that the swap is not done as in normal disk, but it's adapted to flash,
mm-hmm.
right? That's what I was thinking, rather than having the, you know, the...
Which is probably what we want in the end. Like, that's probably, the way you're thinking is probably how it should be used. So that you don't have any swap.
Exactly.
On
so
disk. You don't have any swap on disk at all.
Yeah, but the thing is that I was always, I think this made the point clear, is that I was always thinking that we will be storing in the SSD only anonymous pages, which is usually what is stored in the normal swap space.
Right.
Right? Yeah, but... Actually, I think it's a better idea the other way around. I mean, it's storing the whole thing, so we avoid a lot of page reference. And in some sense, it's good because we are, in the case of a page cache,
mm-hmm.
we are also doing some kind of or doing the SSD as a cache,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's somewhat also another solution for L2ARC, right?
Except that we don't have persistent mapping, which means...
But L2ARC doesn't have any persistent mapping either.
Right. So some things like pdflush, which want to synchronize with the for primary copies on disk of file pages, should still work in the same way as before.
Exactly. But now you have page faults.
You have page faults when you're reading from memory. Now, so you may have to go to swap, and then by default.
Right. That made me remember. I also read about pageable kernel. Pageable
okay.
kernel.
Yeah.
That's
an important discussion.
So it turns out that in case of the FreeBSD, I read only FreeBSD. Actually, it read for BSD,
mm-hmm.
4.4 BSD. So I don't know what is the status of FreeBSD, and I think that's when I wrote the email.
Mm-hmm.
Should be mostly the same. So it turns out that most of the kernel is not pageable.
It's not pageable.
Yeah, and in fact, the only part that is pageable in the kernel is the kernel different kernel stacks. Because you need, for each process, you need a stack for the user process and you need a stack for the kernel, right? So that's the only part pageable.
Mm-hmm.
But the VSD offers two ways of allocating memory in the kernel,
uh-huh.
which is one is pageable, you do some kind of malloc pageable or normal malloc, where you don't page that memory out.
Okay.
But it says that most of the kernel is
non-pageable.
It's non-pageable. Exactly. And I'm guessing that's the case, because I think that usually the kernel doesn't have a big overhead. So it probably doesn't make sense to, you know, to go for the risk, right? Because now you need to be careful. It's like,
no, but what about the page cache?
The page cache
you're saying is that it's adapting.
Yeah, and the thing is that it doesn't make sense to swap the page cache because you have to go to the disk anyway, right?
Mm.
So just, you know, send it to its fixed location in the faucet.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
And actually, the page cache is a subsystem that consumes most of the memory in the system.
And that, in our case, has to be pageable. There is no other way.
In our case, has to be pageable.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, because now we're reducing the... Yeah, so we need to make it pageable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's interesting discussion.
Mm-hmm.
In 4.4 BSD, right? This is the one that you read?
Yes, the 4.4 BSD design and implementation. Yeah, and actually, it's in the 4.4 BSD where I found all these structures. But I check also in the free BSD code, and all the data structures exist as explained in 4.4 BSD.
Okay. Good. So yeah, I mean, we need to do maybe few revisions of the design,
mm-hmm.
with the comments that you have and maybe comments that Ricardo and Akshat would have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Would also ask you to read the flushing, buffering, and prefetching.
Yeah.
That might address some of the things like, okay, so eager flushing. So you synchronize when you are under when you detect that you are going to go under memory pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you start flushing ahead of time, so that
mm-hmm.
you have enough number of prefetches.
Mm-hmm.
So those sort of discussions should appear here.
Okay. Yeah. So I will continue with the design.
Yeah. And especially the clock thing.
Yeah.
I want to think about that.
And also we'll try to think how to implement the designs that we're also proposing, because
mm-hmm.
probably that would change. I mean, I would probably find that
some
that's
of
not
those,
possible or,
yeah.
or it's too complicated and we can fix it this way.
And the other thing is that we have to figure out how to implement in the first place, right? I mean, where to implement, whether we should simulate or implement. I mean, I think that discussion we need to have more.
Yeah, but I think what we're doing is fine. So we should keep the design with some real virtual memory design, so
mm-hmm.
that we know that it's possible to do more operating systems. And then we probably can design if we have a simulator simulation.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Lewis.